Hello, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Morningstar Men's Weekly Podcast. As you're going to notice almost immediately, the recording today sounds a little different. It does because, well, sometimes technology fails us, and sometimes we just fail to use technology. So this week, I failed to use technology correctly. And in fact, I forgot to push the right buttons at the right time, and so spent an hour plus of thinking I was recording the presentation for the morning, only to find out that I wasn't. So what you're getting here is a rather poor recap, a rendition of what I did earlier today. I hope it suffices to drive home the main points for the week. Incidentally, as I do from time to time, let me take a moment now to remind you that the way in which we help to reach other men, the way in which other men are benefited by this, is when any of us, when we hear something good, when we read something good, we share it with somebody else. So if you've been blessed by this podcast at any time, maybe one or another episode, would you take a moment to perhaps reach out to a friend and suggest that he listen to that as well? It takes no more effort once this material is produced to share it with others. Sometimes when you listen to other people's podcasts done professionally, you'll hear them say, in fact, that without your support, it would be impossible to produce this podcast or that podcast or do this or that. And I'm always a little puzzled by that because, frankly, it doesn't take all that much money to do these things. It's more the time that it takes to think through important issues and be able to present something in a way that is reasoned and sensible and understandable. That's the real work here. It doesn't cost us more to share this with more people. So I'd encourage you, share this with some friends, any of these episodes that are of use. That's how we connect with more people. And let me assure you, there are many people who might say, I really don't want to go to your church, or at least not right now. But in the privacy of their own car, when they never have to admit to you that they were actually listening to something, they might track along with something and listen to it and gain something from it. So don't ever minimize the value of your offering to somebody else a resource that might be of help to them. All right. So enough on that. We're in our third week in a series that's called Honest Conversations, and it deals with prayer as a component of relationship. I've referred to it as relational prayer, or honest and open and genuine, authentic prayer. And what I mean by that is that prayer, the communication between us and our Father, our God, our King, is in many respects similar to that between any other two people who are in relationship. And so we know that a relationship has to be integrated and it has to be drawn together. It's not as if my communication can be one thing while my actions or my other behaviors or my attitudes are completely different. So today we're going to look at what happens when connection is broken, what happens when connection is breached. How do we restore that? Before I do that, though, one of the things that I shared with our guys is the fact that sometimes we know things that we don't use. Matter of fact, this is true for each of us. We know far more than we use, and sometimes what we know actually does nothing but make us more confused or make us feel guilty about what we're not doing. So maybe you'd like to pause this. If you have the capability to pause this podcast for a moment and then return to it, stop this for a moment and think before you do, before you stop this, just hear this out. Think about the things that you have heard in the past that have perhaps convicted you, maybe even made you feel guilty, better yet, challenged you to want to be somebody different, do something different, try something different. Think about the most inspirational and motivational things that you have heard in the past 60 days. And then ask yourself this. What next steps have you taken as a result of being inspired? In other words, have you heard something and just said, I'd love to be that, but not done anything about it? Or have you actually taken some steps to do something to move in that direction? So pause this now for a moment and think about that. 60 days, what have you heard? How's it challenged you? What have you done with it? Okay, so hopefully you did have the time to pause the recording and you're back with us live now. Well, not live, but canned. Sorry. Anyway, here's a series of questions that I posed to our guys this morning. I'm going to ask them to all of you and that are listening along here. What have I learned or been reminded of or seen in a new way? And that's something you might want to ask yourself as you're listening this morning or this evening or whatever time of the day it is. What are you learning? Or what important thing haven't you heard for a while, but you're going to hear it and say, oh yeah, I know that. Oh, but I'm not doing real well with that. Or have you or will you uncover a truth that you know applies in one area of life, but for some reason, when you listen to this, you're going to say, oh, I never thought of it that it could apply to that area of my life as well. So I invite you to think about the things that you have learned and think about what you would do with them. What good is learning? Here's a good way to ask this. What good is learning new things if the things that you learn are of no practical value to you? You know, I've used this example before, but it bears repeating here. Suppose that I were to give you $10,000 in, I don't know, some obscure currency. I have no idea. Let's pick some country in Africa. The Congo. Whatever the unit of the monetary unit is in the Congo, suppose I were to give you the equivalent of 10,000 United States dollars, but it were to be in Congolese money. Now, I know if you're smart, you'd say, well, I'd just go find a currency exchange, and I'd take care of that problem, and it'd be transferred into United States dollars in short order. Okay, but suppose you didn't have that option. Suppose you didn't know where or how to translate or to transfer that money into usable funds. What would you do with it? You had what could be wealth, but it really wasn't wealth because you didn't know how to use it. And that's the way it is with a lot of the information that we have. We know things. We know things that we've read in God's Word. We know things that we've heard, good information that we've read in books, things that have challenged us. But then we don't do anything with it. And essentially, it's just like that Congolese money. And if I don't have a way to take that and exchange it for some form of currency that I can use, it's going to sit there on a shelf or in a drawer, collect dust, and be of no value. And I think, men, we need to think about that in light of the information that we gather. So, as you listen along this morning, I want you to think about how you will, and underscore that word will, how you will use what we're going to do to talk about this morning. Will you develop a new practice, a new habit for daily living? Will you begin to practice a new attitude? Will you start to treat some people differently? Will you approach God differently? So information without a plan for its use is just like that Congolese money. Don't listen any longer to anything that you listen to that you find valuable. Do not listen to it any longer simply so that you can amass more information. Listen to it and all the while be asking yourself this question, precisely what am I going to do to implement this new thing into my life? And then maybe you want to get together with a friend once a week or every other week. Whatever's convenient for you. Don't make it something stressful. Make it something manageable. And swap stories about what you're learning and how you're using what you're learning. And as a matter of fact, be so bold as to share with people, a close friend of yours, something that you've learned and you intended to use it, but now you haven't used it. And now you've, forgive me for using this phrase, but outed yourself on that. In other words, you now have admitted that you have information and desire to change, but you've not done anything to actually implement that desired change in your life. Well, maybe your friend can help you. Maybe the two of you together can work through the process of helping each other to bring about good change. There's something else you should be listening for. What might I need to stop doing? And the things that you stop doing, sometimes we sit in church and we hear things and we think, when we think about things that we should stop doing, it's always sinful behaviors. Listen, I'm not saying that you need to give up something that is sinful. I mean, of course you want to give up something that's sinful, but maybe that's not the thing you should stop doing. Maybe there are things that are just getting in the way of doing better things. Maybe something that's fun, something that's enjoyable, something that even for a while was very helpful, is just in the way now, and you need to give that up so that you can move on to the next plane of growth and development in your life. All right, finally, what relationship would be impacted beneficially if you were to implement some change as a result of what you learned? That's always a good topic to consider. How would a relationship of mine be improved if I were to begin implementing this thing that I've learned in my life in some way? All right, so again, take a moment now, reflect on that. What can I do with what I've just learned or been reminded of? How will I think differently? How will I behave differently? What new attitude would I have? What could I stop doing as a result of what I've learned? Or finally, what relationship would be impacted if I were to do something different? I'm going to pause for a moment again, and then we'll pick back up with relational prayer. Okay, welcome back. And today, as I said before, we're in our third week in the topic Honest Conversations. Week one, the big theme was that God, the Lord of heaven and earth, the King of the universe, the Creator of all things, and I could go on and on, that God, the one and only, has a desire to meet with, to commune with each of us. That was the theme for week one. And yet each of us, if we're not careful, has within us, because of our busyness, because of our distractedness, because of personal and private agendas, we have the ability to walk right past God standing along the side of our lives, waiting for us to pull over. God standing there waiting and saying, hey, I've prepared this time and this place. Would you like to come and meet with me? I would really like to meet with you. And we miss those moments. Now, we saw with Moses in the burning bush, to Moses' credit, Moses did turn aside. Not because he expected to meet God, just because he was amazed at a bush that didn't stop burning. So he was curious enough. Isn't that a great word? Moses was curious enough to be distracted from his daily habitual grind of being a shepherd. Moses was curious enough to stop for 5 minutes and walk over and say, I wonder what's going on over here. And God invited him into a meeting at that time. But if we're not careful, we'll walk right by those burning bush moments in our own life. So, point number one, God hungers, God desires, God longs to meet with us, His sons. But we have to be willing to break from our routine and meet God. And frustrating as this can be for us who are slaves to schedule sometimes, and that's not a bad thing, incidentally. You know, sometimes other people make our schedule. Your company cannot run, the company that you either manage or own or work in, that company can't run if everybody makes their own hours and they just independently, arbitrarily decide, well, I think I'm not going to come to work today because I'm going to meet with God. And I think God is sensitive to that. God understands that if you have an appointment to be at work at 8 o'clock and that appointment is a 5-day-a-week appointment, and you have an appointment to stay at work until 4:30 or 5 o'clock, I don't think God says, hey, listen, would you meet with me Tuesday and Wednesday of this week? I know you haven't given your boss any notice, but would you just take Tuesday and Wednesday off and meet with me? I don't think God is an unrealist. But there are all of those other times when perhaps God may want to meet with us, but we have an agenda, a pre-planned agenda. Take some time to look at your schedule and ask, have you allocated any time that if God wanted to, He could meet with you? Just think about that for a moment. I'll catch up with you momentarily. Okay, we're back again, and last week we looked at the topic of missing God because we were too busy with religion. And we used the example of the Tower of Babel there, and we said that you know, God saw people building, people who were united, and he saw them building, and he came down to see what they were doing, and the people were slaving away to build a temple to reach the heavens. And what did they expect to find in the heavens? Well, they expected to find God there. And so they wanted to build this great thing that would allow the people from all over to come and meet with God there, and the people of the city would make a name for themselves. They would be the center of religious activity. And there would be the center where God and man met. And meanwhile, God was right there amongst them, and they didn't even notice it. And so that can happen to us too. Religious activity is not the same as genuine fellowship with God. We need to understand that. And that can be true not only with our actions, but that can be true with our words. Authentic prayer is gut-wrenchingly honest. You know, and I think some of us, especially those of us who grew up in church, think that prayer sounds a certain way, is expressed in a certain way. You know, for some of us, it might even have a set cadence and a rhythm and a feel to it. And you and I don't talk that way in everyday life. We don't think that way. Sometimes our emotions are raw. Sometimes we shout, or maybe you don't shout, but I have to tell you, sometimes I shout. Other times I talk softly. Other times I think, but I don't even have fully formed sentences that come into the forefront of my thinking. Well, if that's true in my relationships with other people, it would have to be true in my relationship with God. Prayer is not mechanical. It's not rhythmic. It is not just this disciplined, organized expression all the time. Prayer is what we are and who we are at the moment, and that, whatever we are at that moment, communing with our Lord, our friend, our Savior. And remember, he's all that. That's going to be one of our points today, but let me introduce that point now, a little bit out of the sequence that I had intended to. But when we think of God, we think about God who is our King, and we see that clearly in the Scripture. We think about God, whom Jesus refers to frequently as our Father. That's a theme that's repeated often. And then Jesus introduces a really cool concept. He's not the first one to do it. Moses actually describes himself as a friend of God. He says to us that he met with God, and God met with him as a man meets with his friend. And so there we see God as our friend. So God is at least, these three things to each of us. God is our King, God is our Father, and God is our friend. Well, how do you talk to a king? And how do you talk to a friend? And do you talk to a king and to a friend in the same way? And what do you do when your friend is the king, and your friend the king happens to be your dad? Well, one of the dilemmas that we so often face is that God is our King. As a matter of fact, the Scriptures describe Him as the just judge. Well, that would be another role that we could introduce for God. How would you talk to the judge? The just judge. The judge that could not be influenced, he could not be pandered to, he could not be convinced with a clever sales pitch. The judge who knew you through and through. The judge who knows you intimately, the judge who knows you better than yourself, is also your dad, your friend, and the king of the kingdom, the one and only kingdom. And so all of those roles are roles that God fills. And he invites us, as mere mortals, to come and commune with him at all of those levels. And by doing that, by inviting us to commune, what he is ultimately asking us to do is to take a risk. So I don't know about you, but I don't have that much experience with talking to kings. And frankly, I'll be all too happy not to have much experience at all talking with judges. Maybe you're the same. I did have a father, an earthly father. He's no longer with me, sadly. I miss him sometimes. Miss him a lot sometimes. But we've had fathers and we know how to talk to them. Some of us have had awkward relationships with our dads, so we're not even quite sure when we say God as our dad what that means. But hopefully all of us have had a friend or two in life that we could be candid with, open with, honest with, and who accepted us for who we are. God being all them implies that from time to time in this relationship, we're going to have to take some risks in how we pray. We're going to have to speak openly. We're going to have to speak boldly. And remember this, and this is one of these reminders, this is not as if I'm revealing anything new to you. God already understands everything about us and everything that's going on inside of us. He just wants us to get it out there in the open so that we can talk about it. See, it's not a secret from God. So the only barrier is not that we've hidden things from God. The only barrier is we haven't put things on the table so that we can talk about them. And that's a big difference. See, in a husband and wife relationship, you can really hide things from your wife. She might be perceptive, she might know you well, she might know that you're not being entirely forthright or forthcoming with her, but she doesn't necessarily know what's going on in your inside. The big difference between that and with God is God already knows. So while you can fool those closest to you in human relationships, you can't fool God. But you can keep things off the conversational table. You can draw limits, barriers, fences around certain things in your life and say, okay, that topic is off limits, God. I won't talk about that with you. Well, God still knows it. So the question is, are you willing to take the risk to put everything on the table and talk to the God who is the King of the universe, who is the just judge of all circumstances, who is your Father? And we've all had fathers, and we know that fathers discipline, fathers can be strict, fathers can be firm, and also your friend. And maybe sometimes being open with your friends can be the toughest, because they're the ones who love you, and you don't want to let them down. You don't want to disappoint your friends. So I guess what I'm saying is that every role that God fills is one which we can be reluctant to be open to God. And we'll try to keep these things off limits. In order to be open and honest in our conversation with God, we have to be willing to risk putting everything in bounds. Everything is fair for a conversation. And I think that takes years, probably, to learn, to do well. And to really trust that when we put something out there on the table for God, and we just say, okay, this is fair game. It wasn't before, but it is now. Let's talk about this. We have to trust that while the things that God may do as the result of us putting that on the table may be difficult to endure for a little while, that God loves us and is going to do nothing in the process of dealing with that issue apart from helping us in the long run. And that the short and momentary pain is going to pay dividends in the long run. Let me pause this and regather my thoughts again. Okay, and I'm back again. And we're going to look now at another topic that I introduced, or another point that I introduced, and that is that the Scriptures describe God as a bridegroom and describes the church as His bride. Well, I want to make that just a little bit more personal this morning for the sake of illustration. And we'd say that God is the bridegroom, and we personally become the bride, and each of us enters into that personal and intimate relationship with Him. And intimate, guys, in good ways, okay? This is not some weird thing. God desires to be intimate with us in the sense that we are an open book before God. And yet, in the Scripture, when God describes Himself as a bridegroom, the readers at the time, the listeners at the time, would have understood clearly that it is always the bridegroom who calls the bride to live at his house. That the bridegroom doesn't, as a matter of course, go to live with the bride's family, but rather the bridegroom calls the wife to live with he and his family. And so here's what the bridegroom is saying. The bridegroom is saying, I would like you to come be a part of my life and share my life and what I'm doing. And I know sometimes women become very uncomfortable with this. This is not about control. Okay, what God is saying to each of us is, I would like you to come share what I am doing. And instead, what we do today is sometimes we as the bride say, God, I'd like to invite you into my life, and I'd like you to become part of what I'm doing, and I'd like you to show a special interest in what I'm doing. And it's not as if God doesn't do that. But what God is really trying to do is, God is really saying, I want you to be a part of what I'm doing and where I'm going and whom I'm reaching and what I'm involved in. And so I'd like to say that we start out in our relationship with God sort of like a blended family. So we have all of our stuff from our apartment or our house or wherever we lived. And God says, hey, I'd like you to be a part of my family. And we're saying, nah, boy, I'd really like you, God, to be a part of my family. And so first there's this tussle of whose turf we're going to live on. Are we going to live on our turf and we're asking God to join us on our turf? And amazingly, sometimes he does that. Or are we saying, nope, I think I'm going to pack my things and I'm going to move to God's house because he's invited me to do that. And if you've ever endured the process of transition of trying to blend a family and make of two former families one, you know how tough that can be. And the illustration that I used this morning in the men's study, and I'd like to use that again here in this recap, is, you know, sometimes in a blended family, there's just too much stuff to fit in the new house. And some things have just got to go. And sometimes the best thing that we can do when God invites us to live at his house and we say yes, sometimes the best thing for us to do is have a yard sale. Because there just ain't enough room in the new house to hold all the stuff. We got too many toasters and too many dining room sets and too much bedroom furniture and too much of everything. And some of it's got to go. Well, if we're going to be open in this relationship, one of the things that we're going to have to do when God calls us and we say yes is we're going to have to reach out to God and say, okay, how much room is in your house? Is there a room for this in your house? Is there a room in this, in your plan for a relationship for the two of us, for this to come, or does this thing have to go? Guys, sometimes we need to just organize a giant yard sale. So maybe right now, let's pause again, and each of you ask the question, since you have said, I do, to Christ, have you had that moment, and I think we have to have it frequently, when you said, is there room for this, God, in your house, or does this have to go? Maybe stop right now and do some business with God and have the courage. Take the risk and ask him, God, is there something that I've been trying to force into one of the rooms of your house, and it just doesn't fit there? And you've known it doesn't fit all along, and you've been trying to tell me it doesn't fit, but I just haven't wanted to hear you. Is today the day that you need to listen to God? I'll be back in a minute. You think about that. Okay, well, we're back again, and what I'd like to do now is take the first 2 weeks in review and try to tie them into this week. So in the first week, when we looked at the story of God calling Moses and calling to him from the burning bush, we see that God demonstrated that he already knew Moses, demonstrated that he had heard Moses and been following along with Moses' life and his concerns all along, knew Moses before, well before Moses ever had an inkling that there was a God that knew him. And God didn't only want to relate to Moses, but God wanted to give Moses a mission, a special and unique purpose for living and for life. And that's true for each of us, that God has a unique mission for each of us. Sometimes it's really big, sometimes it's something pretty grand. And then we look at week two. And in week two, we see that sometimes people think they have a mission that they're going to perform for God. So if in week one we saw that God reaches out to people and calls to them personally and says, I'd like you to be part of my team and I have a special job for you. Then week two, when we look at the story of the Tower of Babel, is people saying, you know, I don't know anything about this God or what he wants me to do, but maybe we could build this thing together that would be big enough that we could reach God. And in the process of doing what they thought would reach God, they were abandoning the very mission that God had given them, which was to spread out across the face of the region, to be fruitful, and to multiply. It was the garden mandate repeated, except on a larger scale. I'd like you guys to go. I'd like you guys to go out by your family, by your tribe, by your clan, and I'd like you to go, and I'd like you to spread out. Experience new things. Try new things. Do new things. Flourish and fill the earth. But instead they didn't. Because they didn't trust God. And they had a different plan for their lives. And we'd call that plan religion. And so today we're going to begin by saying that it is possible to alienate ourselves from God and separate ourselves from God to the extent that we're not even aware that we're no longer doing God's work. We're just doing our own work. That's why Jesus, when he's ready to leave earth, right before he goes to the cross and he's having this last intimate meal with his followers, and he tells his followers this metaphorical model for how they should live their lives in community and with him. There are verses that we know so well. And he says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may be more fruitful. So there's the first model. He says, in order to be fruitful, you're going to have to be pruned. It's an ongoing work. You're going to start out and you're going to produce some things, but I'm going to clip a little here, chop a little there, do a little thing. It's going to feel painful, but gradually you're going to produce more and better fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Well, it's interesting that Jesus has to tell people that he's face to face with, if you're not careful, you won't remain connected to me. Right? Don't we know that to be true? Don't we know that to be true? As soon as something is out of sight, you know that phrase, out of sight, out of mind. As soon as something is a little distant from us, we can start to become detached from us. I find it interesting that Jesus here, face to face with his followers, has to give them this special reminder, if you do not stay connected to me, you're going to drift. And it doesn't mean, he says, that you're not going to do things. It doesn't mean you're going to stop working. It doesn't mean you're going to stop producing. It's just what you're producing is not going to be of value to me. You'll do all this stuff and it will seem as if it is really good stuff to you, but because you're not connected to me, it's not going to be the right stuff. It's not going to be stuff that will last. It's not going to be stuff that will necessarily even help other people in the long run. Boy, don't we see a lot of example of that. Don't we even see that in our country today, where we see a lot of programs intended to help people? And the downside is that while there is an initial benefit, the cost to the people that are being helped seems to almost offset the benefit in the long run. Listen, there's a lot of practical wisdom in what Jesus said. If you do not stay connected to me, you'll produce fruit, but it won't be the right kind of fruit. It won't be good fruit. Well, then that begs the other question. What are the things that can separate us from God? If the only way that we can produce good fruit, if the only way that we can fulfill the unique and special mission that God has for us here, is if we stay connected to Christ, then don't we really, really want to know what it is that could separate us from Christ? And we know what we started to look at last week, which was sin. Sin can certainly separate us. Today, this morning, in the men's study, we looked at a number of things. We made a list together. Pride and ego. Certainly our own sinfulness. Busyness. A lack of trust, a lack of confidence in God, right? Isn't that true at times? That we simply lack a trust in God, and so we strike off on our own thinking, well, I don't know if I can trust God now. I think I'll just develop a plan that seems a little safer or better. So we become fearful. That was another item on the list, that we become fearful. Well, the list was long, but I think each of us needs to do a little bit of reflection. Listen, you already know what separates you from God. I know what separates me from God. We each understand it. If we're reflective people, if we take any time to think about our lives, we already know the things that can tend to separate us from God. Maybe it's a sinful practice. Maybe it's a lack of confidence. Maybe it's just busyness. Maybe it is. We think we're better than we really are and we don't need God. Again, guys, I'm going to pause this for a moment. Let's do business with God here. Remember, He already knows. So when you confess your sin to God, you're not really confessing it to God. He's not shocked when you tell Him. He already knew. All you're doing is getting it out on the table so you can finally, for the first time in your relationship, talk about it openly and honestly. Or the second time, or the third time. You're not shocking God. You're not going to destroy your friendship with God. God has been waiting for this moment when you finally come clean on this thing and He says, wow, I've been waiting for us to be able to talk about this. I'm so glad you're finally ready. So maybe in a quiet moment right now, just pause this and get real with God. What is it that's separating you? What is it that's potentially damaging your relationship? Okay, well, hopefully you're back with me now. And we're going to move from evaluating what can separate us to what we need to do to have ourselves reunited to God. And before we leave the topic of what separates us, I want you to create this picture in your mind. And it's a direct result of what Jesus has to tell His followers, that you need to stay, to abide in Me and I in you. You need to abide. And the way I described it to our guys is like every day there are things that are in our lives, in each of our lives, that are attempting to hack away at this vine and separate us from God. Every single day of your life, there are things that are trying to cut the vine. And so every single day of your life, if you've ever heard someone say, well, you need to have a quiet time or you need to spend some time with the Lord every day. I know that sounds so religious and I know that sounds so quaint and I know that sounds so boring, right? Let's just call it what it is. It sounds boring and unappealing and it sounds like something that maybe your great-great-grandfather did. But listen, it's not that at all. It's like, think about your life, guys. Think about your relationships. Every day there are things that are coming against you and they're hacking away at this connection between you and God and they want to sever the connection. And you might not even notice that the connection is severed for a while. I mean, clearly the people at this plain in Shinar where they started to build this great temple that, you know, we call the Tower of Babel, they didn't know that their connection was severed. They thought they were building something to get them connected with God, and they didn't realize that they had just like completely lost the connection with God, so much so that God was in front of them, it says, and they couldn't even see Him. They didn't recognize Him. You don't want to find one day when you're 60 years old or 50 years old and you look back and you think, my word, I've lived the last 10 or 20 years of my life with a lack of connection. And look at where I find myself today. And so every day we have to do things to restore the connection, to make sure that the vine is whole, to make sure that any chopped out areas of that connection get the attention they need so that there is a full flow of everything that Jesus has for us and a full flow back where we're in open and authentic communication with God, because Jesus says that is the only way that we remain effective in what He's called us to do. And that means being a husband. It means being a dad. It means being an effective business person. It means being a good friend. I don't know what else it means. Maybe being a coach or maybe being a mentor to people. Whatever it is, whatever the important stuff in your life is, the really, truly important stuff. And it's not all religious stuff. I mean, some of it is just basic relational stuff, and some of it is commerce and doing business, because business helps people. And so all that, we need the connection to Christ in order to do this in a way that bears rich and meaningful fruit for others. And because things are coming to hack away at our vine that connects us, that vine that connects us to Christ, we need to be with God every day. We need to assess where the vine needs help. All right, enough on that. I've covered that pretty well. But what happens when we intentionally do things to break that? What happens when it's our fault, when there is a disconnect? But we have to look in the mirror and say, yeah, and it wasn't outside forces that did it, it was me. I either chose to do this wrong thing, knowing that God would be displeased, but knowing that it would bring me momentary, fleeting happiness in the moment, and I couldn't resist the impulse to go off and do this thing, even though I knew it would bring separation between me and God. What happens when we find ourselves there? You found yourself there, you know it, so have I. Let's read a little bit from Psalm 6. And incidentally, if you're in a place where you can write, let me give to you the three Psalms that we're going to look at this morning. And when you have some time over the next week or so, I'd encourage you to carefully read through each of these Psalms several times. Even commit to memory some of these ideas that are expressed, because they're going to be so important to you for the rest of your life. And so the three Psalms that we're going to look at are Psalm 6, Psalm 51, and Psalm 25. I'll repeat that. It's Psalm 6, Psalm 51, and Psalm 25. And so in Psalm 6 here, this is, it says, probably written by David. It says, O Lord, rebuke me not in your anger, nor discipline me in your wrath. But instead be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am languishing. Wow. Listen to what else he says. He says, heal my bones, O Lord, for my bones are troubled. My soul is greatly troubled. But you, O Lord, oh, how I long for you. Well, isn't it interesting? He starts out, and it's like, don't we all feel like this when we know that we have violated something in the relationship? We've told God we're not going to do this, and we do. God has said to us, you don't want to do that, and we do it anyway. And we sense the displeasure of God. Whether it's just our conscience speaking to us or whether it is the Spirit of God inside of us speaking to us, but don't we all in one way or another have this feeling, rebuke me not in your anger. And we sense that God might be angry. We treat God as if he were a man and that he would be spitefully angry. And you know the difference between anger and spiteful anger. Anger is a frustration, a great frustration, an emotional response to something that is wrong. But spiteful anger seeks to take redress and seeks to get even. And we know that God is a just judge. And we know that God would be just if he were to exact from us the punishment that is deserved. And so David pleads, he says, rebuke me not in your anger, and don't discipline me while you're wrathful. Oh, please don't do that. And isn't that an expression of where we are? And then he says, turn, O Lord, deliver my life. Save me for the sake of your steadfast love. For the sake of your steadfast love. Let me turn over to Psalm 51. And while I'm doing that, what you're going to see here in the first few verses, let me just tell you this, is you're going to see something that each of us needs to remember. When we come to God, one thing that is extremely helpful to do is we come to God based on His character, not on our guilt. We come to God not because we deserve to come to God or because we deserve mercy. We come to God with confidence because we know God is merciful. That's just who God is. So here we have a different version of this same expression. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love. According to your abundant mercy, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin, for I know my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. And so here's a man who he's just stuck down, burdened with the guilt from his sin. And he comes to God not based on, hey God, remember when I used to be a good guy, remember all the good stuff I've done for you in the past. God, I really need to call in a favor. Listen, we need more than a favor from God. A favor is something that somehow in the past you have done something and the scales are uneven. Right? Either you're calling in a favor, which means in the past you did something great for God and somehow He owes you this, or you're making a promissory note about the future, which we all know we don't hold control over, and we're saying, listen, God, if you do this for me, then I'll do this and I'll repay that favor. God, you'll be able to call in that favor for me, as if somehow we had the capability to do that. But instead, David is smart enough to know that. He says, God, when I come to you, I don't come to you based on who I am or what I've done or what I might be able to do for you in the future if I can make good on that promise. Instead, I come to you and I'm relying wholly, totally, completely on who you are. You're a God who has steadfast love, rock solid, immovable, steadfast, reliable. Come storm, come good time, God's love is steadfast. And I come to you based on the fact that your love is steadfast. It doesn't move. And I come to you based on your abundant mercy. So the next time that there is a separation in that vine that connects you and your Savior, you come to Him not based on what you were in the past, not based on who you'll be in the future, not based on anything but the character and the quality of God, which is steadfast love and abundant mercy. How cool is that? And then finally, we're going to turn back over to Psalm 25, and we're going to wrap things up with that, because, I don't want to outwear my welcome with you. And so we turn over to Psalm 25, and to you, O Lord, I will lift up my soul. O my God, in you I trust. And in this psalm, we see the formation of some verbal worship. Having experienced restoration, having experienced the good, the blessing of God, the unmerited, undeserved favor of God, having experienced all of that, we come to God with worship. And the thought that I'd like to leave you with here, in keeping with having a fully connected vine where Jesus and I are one and nothing separates us, is this. That worship with your words is one thing, but worship with your life is another. And this is where we begin to fulfill our purpose, the thing that God has called us to joyfully and gladly. Because we know that God has entrusted this great thing to our care, this noble thing, this thing that He has said, I think it's within you. If you stay connected with me, if you abide in me, I think it is possible for you and I together to do this great thing. And I'd like you to do it. And then our expression to God is, you know, I'm going to trust you to do that through me. And I believe in you. And I want to honor you with my life by doing this. And that, guys, is a pretty amazing, pretty cool form of worship. So remember this. This is my parting thought to you. Yeah, maintain that connection. Remember that God's steadfast love and mercy is always available to us. It doesn't matter how deeply you have sunk from where you started out. It doesn't matter how far away you have strayed. It doesn't matter if the wheels of your wagon have not only come off, but they're not even, you can't even find the wheels to your wagon anymore. Guys, there is always hope for restoration and renewal with God. And you come to God, I come to God, based on His steadfast love and abundant mercy. See you again next week.